Morning. I'd like to thank the organizers for giving me an opportunity to present the results of this work. I'll be talking about the effect of expedited partner therapy on chlamydia prevalence, the Washington State community-level randomized trial. Expedited partner therapy is the practice of treating the partners of persons with a curable STI without requiring their prior medical evaluation. Most commonly, this involves patient-delivered partner therapy or giving people medicines to give to their sex partners. EPD has been shown to increase partner treatment and decrease the risk of recurrent gonorrhea and chlamydial infection in randomized trials and is cost effective. It's now legal in 31 states, but the ability to bring EPT interventions to scale remains uncertain, and the effect of widespread EPT use on STI rates is unknown. We instituted the Washington State community-level randomized trial of expedited partner therapy to determine if a program to promote the use of EPT can be brought to scale in the state with 6.5 million inhabitants, and to determine if an EPT program can decrease the prevalence of chlamydia and incidence of gonorrhea in the population of women. We conducted a step-wedge community-level randomized trial in which local health jurisdictions were the unit of randomization and analysis. A local health jurisdiction is a geographically defined unit which most often corresponds to a single county. 23 of the 25 LHJs in Washington State participated in the trial. King County, which is where Seattle is located, was not included because the intervention was developed in King County and was already ongoing prior to the study, and one small LSJ refused to participate. The LSJs were randomly assigned into four waves, and randomization was stratified by region and LSJ size. The study intervention was then instituted during four time steps separated by 6 to 8 months. This slide gives you a graphical depiction of a step-wedge community-level trial. As I said, the LSJs were randomly assigned into waves, and then the time of institution of intervention was randomized. The outcome was measured in each of a series of time steps, so the observations were in sync to control for time trends, and the analysis compared variance between communities and within a community before and after the intervention. Our intervention had two components. The first was the promotion of patient-delivered partner therapy and access to free patient-delivered partner therapy throughout the state. Our goal was to make free PDBT packs available to all providers statewide. We stocked these in high-volume clinics throughout the state and established a network of 157 pharmacies statewide which provided EPT. And we distributed pre-printed prescriptions on case report forms and faxable forms which allowed providers to simply check a box, put the name of the intended recipient of meds on it, and send it into pharmacies. The medications were prepackaged as shown to meet the requirements of the State Pharmacy Board and included an allergy warning, azithromycin, cefixime for packs for persons with gonorrhea, condoms, and information. The second part of the intervention was the targeted provision of public health partner services. Partner services were triaged to persons at high risk for not ensuring their partner's treatment, and this was done by medical providers using a case report form. We supplemented the existing partner services infrastructure of the state by hiring two new DIS, but the trial did use existing DIS as well. And the model of partner services provided was meant to offer assistance to people notifying their sex partners and to offer all persons patient-delivered partner therapy. When DIS contacted patients, those partners were also offered medications without having to see a medical provider first. Now, we did encounter one complication with this, which is that in 2007, the Washington State Legislature allocated new funds for communicable diseases, which increased the provision of partner services outside of the trial in 2008 and 2009. This slide is showing you a Washington State case report form, and as you can see, this form includes a section in which providers are asked whether or not they want their patient to receive partner services. We recommend that people be referred to public health for partner services if they have more than one sex partner in the last 60 days, a partner that the person anticipates not having sex with again, there are men who have sex with men, or they say that they're unwilling or unable to contact their partners. The first two of those risk factors have been previously identified and associated with a decreased likelihood of getting your partners treated. The primary outcome of the study was chlamydia positivity among women 15 to 25 tested in IPP clinics. We used a mixed effects generalized linear model with log link and random effects for LHJ size and testing clinic to adjust for the variable number of tests in IPP clinics during different time periods. So the model included covariates for intervention status and time. For gonorrhea incidence, we ascertained our outcome using surveillance data and employed a marginal Poisson regression model. The secondary outcomes included the estimated proportion of persons receiving PDPT from their medical providers, which was ascertained by interviewing a random sample of persons with waiting for non-response, And we looked at the association of community level use of patient delivered partner therapy and partner services coverage with chlamydia positivity and gonorrhea incidence in women. This slide is showing you the percentage of heterosexuals with gonorrhea and chlamydia receiving public health partner services before and after institution of study intervention. As you can see, the proportion of people receiving partner services increased from 25% to 45%. But this increase was only observed in waves 1 and 2. In waves 3 and 4, high levels of patient or partner services use were evident prior to the study intervention, reflecting the state's decision to increase the provision of partner services outside of the randomization in the trial. Here you see the percentage of heterosexuals with gonorrhea and chlamydial infection receiving patient-delivered partner therapy from medical providers before and after institution of the study. Overall, PDPT use went from 18% to 34%, with a relatively consistent pattern across the four study waves, though somewhat lower in wave 4. Among persons not referred to receive public health partner services, 62% received medications from their medical provider to give to their sex partners. This slide is showing you the number of PDPT packs dispensed, distributed by Washington State and dispensed via our pharmacies between 2008 and 2010. The red line is showing you the number of packages of PDPT we sent out to clinics and pharmacies, and the yellow line, the number dispensed via our pharmacy network. In 2010, the final year of the study, during which all LHAs had the intervention ongoing, almost 10,000 PDPT packs were sent out to clinics and pharmacies, and over 3,500 were dispensed by our pharmacy network. Here you see the relationship between PDPT use by medical providers and public health partner services coverage in Washington State LHAs. So the y-axis here, the vertical axis, is the percentage of cases receiving PDPT from their medical provider, and the x-axis is the percentage of cases receiving public health partner services, which this shows is a strong inverse correlation. In other words, in LHAs that provided high partner services coverage, there was less patient-delivered partner therapy used by medical providers. And this final slide looking at the intervention uptake shows you the estimated percentage of people receiving either patient-delivered partner therapy and or partner services. As you can see across the LHAs, a little over 60% of people received one or both of these interventions during the intervention phase of the study. Here you see trends in chlamydia positivity among women aged 15 to 25 tested through IPP and gonorrhea incidence in Washington State women. As you can see, both of these study outcomes significantly declined over the course of the study period, and these were, as I said, statistically significant. But a more complex pattern emerges when we look at the waves themselves. Here you see chlamydia positivity in the IPP clinics divided by study wave. The open boxes are, and the dashed lines look at the pre-intervention period, while the filled-in boxes and solid lines are the intervention period. In wave one, you see a decline in chlamydial positivity that goes up slightly in the final period data point. In wave two, we see a decline following institution in the intervention. But in waves three and four, the decline is evident prior to the initiation of the intervention. And when we look at gonorrhea incidence, we see a very similar pattern. So a steady decline in wave one, across all waves is going down, but in waves 2, 3, and 4, the decline is already ongoing prior to the institution of the study intervention. So in our intention to treat analysis, the study intervention was not associated with a significant decline in either chlamydia positivity or gonorrhea incidence, though the risk ratio for both of these was less than 1. This slide is showing the results of an observational analysis looking at the association of patient-delivered partner therapy used by medical providers and partner services coverage with chlamydia prevalence and gonorrhea incidence. Here, the risk ratios are showing you numbers for a 30% increase in intervention coverage overall. What you see is that both partner services and the combined intervention of patient-delivered partner therapy and partner services are associated with a significant decrease in chlamydia positivity. With our gonorrhea incidence outcome, both patient-delivered partner therapy used by medical providers and the combined intervention of patient-delivered partner therapy and partner services are associated with a significant decline in gonorrhea incidence, and the magnitude of that decline is very much greater than what we observe with chlamydia positivity. But I would point out that this is an observational analysis which is not controlling for a potential secular trend. So in summary, I would say our EPT intervention achieved a high level, or achieved high levels of EPT use by medical providers. The intervention effect on chlamydia prevalence and gonorrhea incidence was not statistically significant, Though our analysis of observational data suggests that higher levels of patient delivered partner therapy use and greater provision of partner services may decrease chlamydia prevalence and gonorrhea incidence. I would conclude that our EPT intervention is a scalable intervention. The use of EPT is facilitated by making free patient-delivered partner therapy packs widely available to medical providers, and that higher levels of use, even than when we're observed in our trial, are probably achievable in communities with lower provision of public health partner services. The population level of effect of EPT, however, remains uncertain. Possible reasons why we didn't see a more significant effect were that, of course, it is possible the intervention is not effective. Alternatively, the communities are not truly isolated, and the intervention effect may have spilled over into communities during the control phase of the trial because people do not choose their sexual partners based on their residence or within a given LHJ. Also, it's possible that competing interventions provided outside of the randomization may have affected our ability to see an intervention effect. This study was the first stepwise community-level trial of an STI intervention ever conducted in the United States, and we believe that the trial demonstrates that such trials are feasible, but that their utility may be limited by the non-isolation of communities and interventions occurring outside of a trial's control. I would say that this trial involved a lot of people's collaboration over many years, and in particular, I'd like to point out Jim Hughes, our study biostatistician, Roxanne Karani, King Holmes, and Hunter Hansfield, as well as, very importantly, our collaboration with Washington State Department of Health, and in particular, Mark Stenger, Mark Aubin. Finally, I'd like to acknowledge NIAID, without whose funding it would not have been possible to do this trial. Thank you. Hey, Heidi.
Excellent work. My name's Heidi Bauer. I'm from California. Congratulations on the study and the analysis. Getting closer to program science, I think. In California, EPT is allowable for chlamydia, gonorrhea, and this year we're adding TRIC to our guidelines. And I'm wondering if, with the new concern about emerging Ceph-resistant GC, and I know Dr. Bolin has stated a lot of cautions around using oral cephalosporins, if you could comment on what your response would be to those concerns and partners getting inferior treatment, et cetera. Thanks.
Sure. So I would say this. I think the preferred agent for gonorrhea is ceftriaxone, and I agree with CDC on that point. I would also say that the prevalence of decreased susceptibility to Neisseria gonorrhea in the United States among heterosexuals is less than 1%. And we have almost no evidence that dual therapy, with ceftriaxone and azithromycin will not work in this population. So to say that we would never use that therapy and that we won't use patient-delivered partner therapy based on a prevalence of less than 1% in heterosexuals, which is the only population that we give this to, is an overreaction to our current epidemiology. And that what we should be doing is monitoring this. And, of course, if and when we get to a point where this is a bigger problem in the population that receives patient-delivered partner therapy, then we'll have to change what we do.
Hi, Catherine Satterwhite, University of Kansas. I just had a quick question. I'm sure you're planning on looking at it, but if you could comment on cost. Particularly the cost of the, it looked like about 6,000 partner packs that did not get distributed.
So this is a rough estimate of the cost.
I was not planted.
She was not a plant. She's not a shill. But I figured someone was going to ask me this. So this is a rough estimate of what we think the costs are. And I think the big issue here, the medication costs, particularly if you can use 340B pricing, should be sustainable. So the medicine and pharmacy costs for the intervention are probably in the $100,000 to $150,000 range for the state, which isn't trivial, but it's not something that a state of our size shouldn't be able to afford. The cost of providing the DIS at the level that we're provided is extremely high. So there you're looking at over $700,000. And whether that is a sustainable, that is not, I think, a sustainable intervention, not at the level we provided it. And, in fact, the Washington State Legislature is not going to continue to provide the partner services, the funding for partner services that was provided. So that piece of it is already going away.
Yeah, Tom Peterman, CDC Atlanta. Great study. Congratulations. I'm wondering two things. First of all, are you planning to continue the EPT program in Washington? And secondly, how did you get the legislature to hire DIS in the middle of your study? Why did they do that?
So there are two questions. The first is, are we continuing? And our goal is to continue the piece of it that relates to provision of patient-delivered partner therapy. The funding on this is going to be a challenge. We have some funding to do it. We will continue this in King County. I am very confident of that. And I think we will be able to continue at least some of it statewide. Group Health and Kaiser are willing to pay for their own meds. And so that's an example where the challenge is really about how do we manage to continue to provide the pre-packs to them, which the logistics of that is a little bit difficult. And I had nothing to do with convincing the state legislature to do anything, so I couldn't address that.
One more question.
Yeah.
Hi, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Rebecca Jordan-Nail, Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. My question has to do with how you got so many providers to accept delivering EPT with liability issues. And we've heard from some local health agencies that it actually HRSA's liability guidelines, if they accept their funding, actually prohibits them from being able to provide essentially services to non-patients. In other words, they can't do EPT because it conflicts with the liability around funding they receive. So how did you negotiate that? Because that's the biggest barrier that we have encountered.
So it's a good question. The HRSA issue hadn't come up for us, so that particular issue I'm not sure I can address for you. I think that we've been doing this since 1998 at some level in Washington State, and we have no adverse reactions. We've distributed many tens of thousands of doses of this. There have been no episodes of anybody being harmed that I'm aware of, and no episodes of anybody being sued. The Washington State guidelines indicate that if you are not able to be confident that the partner will be treated, you should offer the person patient-delivered partner therapy. So it's not clear your liability for not offering it exceeds your liability for giving it. And the standard of care in our state is that you are supposed to mostly be offering this to people. So I would say the liability issues, nobody knows that. Anybody can be sued for anything in this world. And what you should do is provide the best standard of care for your patient. And most doctors and other medical providers in Washington State seem to agree with me on this point.